Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But I wouldn't want to eat that over and over again. There's nothing. Coffee. I could live on coffee.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back for another edition of Collider Ladies Night. I have Kate Morrow with me this time, and we're here for her brand new show, A Teacher, but it's Ladies Night. We talk about a little bit of everything, and you have so many incredible titles that I can't wait to hit.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
You can guarantee that Megan Levy is on the list today because I avoided watching that because I'm super sensitive about anything that has an animal in it. And I was in a puddle of very well-earned tears last night.
Oh, sweet. Well, thanks for watching it. I mean, it is a really beautiful, you know, true story.
Yeah, I was kind of kicking myself for not getting to it sooner, but I'm glad I did now so we could talk about it in a little bit. But we really go back to the beginning on this show. And in doing my research, I read an interview where you had mentioned that you were painfully shy as a kid. And that's not the first time I've heard that on this show from actors. So what do you think it is about shyness that at that age that doesn't necessarily hold someone back from putting themselves out there and getting on stage?
Well, I think it's the shy. I think the fact that I was shy, it made sense that I sort of turned to acting because you're, you know, escaping and sort of hiding really behind other people's personas and characters. So to me, it felt when I was younger, much more comfortable, you know, pretending to be somebody else. I felt much more confident when I was on stage or behind a camera. Or in front of a camera. So I think, you know, now that I look back on it, it does make sense to me. I've grown out of that because I was sort of forced to with the job that I have and doing it for such a long time. But yeah, when I was 9, it was like my parents, when I would tell them I wanted to be an actor, they were like, well, that's really cute, but like you can barely say hello to people. So I think that they were surprised when I was actually able to sort of get on a stage and do anything other than hide behind somebody.
So it's one thing to have that feeling as a kid that you want to be an actor. It's another, I guess, to have yourself believe that you could do it, but maybe also in this situation, your parents. So do you remember the point that they saw you do something that made them think, huh, like, I think she can actually do it?
That's a good question. I think my mom would tell you that it was one of my first auditions, you know. She would drive, we were living in Bedford, New York, which is about an hour outside of the city. And so she would drive me into the city quite often after school for auditions. And I was auditioning for this TV show, Homicide: Life on the Streets. Do you remember that show?
I do not remember that one.
Well, to live in New York at the time, it was like, it was kind of like Law and Order, like everyone okay. was on that show. But that was one of my very first auditions. I don't remember what I had to do, but you know, I remember my mom kind of was waiting in the waiting room for me, and she wasn't in the room with me for the audition. But when I came out, I looked very upset, and I was still sort of crying, and she was like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, but I was just playing, you know, I don't know, a child whose mother was murdered or something." And she was like, "Oh my God, you could cry on command. This is great. You must be able to act." So that was her sort of first realization that I might be able to do it.
So next step of the process, in a sense, and I know everybody's path is different. Some folks like to study more in school. Some like to just jump into it and get experience. And I know you deferred from Tisch. So what was it like making that decision? Was there any wavering, or did you feel certain that you were choosing the best path for yourself?
No, that was pure manipulation on my part. I knew I didn't want to go to college. I had been acting, like I started professionally acting when I was 14. And I was really not, I was really dyslexic. So for me, school was always pretty challenging. And I mean, by the time I got to high school, my dyslexia had gotten a lot better. But I was so determined to get out of high school and start acting full time. But I knew my parents were going to insist on me going to college. So what I did was I decided to go and talk to like my school guidance counselor or something and ask them, you know, how can I graduate early so that I can like get to college early and then get out early. Like I just wanted to get on with my life. So, you know, I think I was 16 or something, and my guidance counselor just said, you know, you just have to take a couple extra classes and then you can do it. And so I went to my parents with this idea of graduating a year early, and they were kind of like, whoa, you know, they knew how serious I was, but I think they were surprised at the motivation there. And so I did it. I graduated, you know, just a year early from high school. I auditioned for Tisch because I knew that my parents were going to be insistent on me going, but I also thought to myself, well, if I could get out of high school and then get a job, then maybe I'll be able to just tell my parents, well, look, I'm making enough money to like live on my own and just work as an actor. Let me defer a year. So that's what I did. I auditioned for Tisch for the CAP 21, the musical theater program, because I was really obsessed with Broadway, and that's really what I wanted. That was my dream. So I got into CAP 21, but then I just kept deferring until, you know, until my parents kind of went, okay, now we see what you're doing here. You're never going to school.
When did the dream shift from Broadway to on-screen work?
Well, it's still one of my dreams to be on Broadway. I would love it so much. But I think the second I did my first movie, I realized that it doesn't matter where you're acting, you know, whether it's on stage or in front of a camera, I just knew it was for me. So it never really went away. I just, you know, once I moved to Los Angeles at 19, I was just physically far away from it. So, you know, it kind of shifted then.
Speaking of the first films, I don't know if this was the first or one of the first, but Random Hearts. I know you were still fairly young at the time, so did it register to you that you were on the set of a Sydney Pollack film playing Kristin Scott Thomas's daughter? Was there kind of, you know, a nerve factor in there?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I was definitely nervous. I knew who Kristin Scott Thomas was, and I was already a fan of hers and of Harrison Ford's. I wasn't so aware. I was only 14, so I wasn't so aware of directors at that point. But, you know, my parents sort of educated me on who he was and how brilliant he was. And then I had, you know, such an amazing time working with him. I think what really made me realize how real it was, I guess, was because I was out of school. I had, you know, I had a tutor on set, which, again, that was also one of my dreams, was to just be homeschooled so I could, again, just be an actor and like not have to deal with all the extra stuff that goes on in the school. So to me, whenever I was on set and I was learning that way, I always thrived. That was sort of my best version of learning. But you know, Sydney Pollack was an absolute dream to work with, just the sweetest thing on the planet.
Is there anything about having that experience with those people on that set as one of your big first features that now makes you look back and think, I am so glad that I had that time with those people?
Yeah, I mean, he is such a legend, and I only learned more and more about what a legend he was, you know, the older I got, you know. But yeah, I mean, it was such a special thing to experience at such a young age. But I do think I was less nervous then probably than I would be, you know, as I was when I got older, you know.
It's very reasonable.
Yeah.
A little more broadly, you amass a whole bunch of credits very, very quickly. And I know job security in this industry is kind of like a near impossible concept, but do you remember the gig you booked, or maybe when you saw the finished product that you worked on, that made you get a sense of, I guess, confidence and a bit of stability? Like, I'm doing this, I'm here, and I'm going forward with some momentum.
Well, I think because I started so young, and as a kid, when I was doing it, it was just obviously it was a hobby, because, you know, I wasn't doing it because I needed to make money as a 14-year-old. I was doing it because it's what I loved. And then I would say, yeah, as I got older and when I was trying to get out of going to college, that's when I really needed to work to show my parents that I was going to be able to make a living doing this without being educated for it. So I don't know. I mean, and I didn't, at that point I was 17, turning 18, and I, you know, was just doing like independent films that were sort of just sort of getting me by. But I was so blissfully unaware of sort of how challenging it can be. And I think because I was young and I didn't have the pressure of like, you have to not live at home and you've got to do this on your own. I was still in New York, and I was living at home at that point. I didn't feel the pressure of having to work nonstop. But yeah, I think that the sort of like blissful unawareness of just sort of doing it, I was doing it because I loved it. And then, and I always had this confidence as a child that it didn't matter how long it took, I was gonna do it. Like, there was no doubt in my mind. And I think a lot of that has to do with my parents, because they just were very supportive of it and of my tenacity and ambition. So yeah, I think as I got older is when I had more doubts about like, oh God, am I ever going to work again? I mean, I still have that fear sometimes, you know?
Yeah. I don't think that ever goes away, especially when you're super passionate about what you're doing.
Yeah.
Speaking of that though, I always do think it's very valuable to talk about those bumps in the road and how you overcame them. So when that kind of blissful ignorance went away, do you remember the first point that kind of, I don't know, like hit you like a truck in a sense, where you're like, oh my God, like, I don't know if I'm going to get past whatever it is, not booking an audition, not having a film pan out the way you hoped, anything at all?
Yeah. I mean, like, cause I moved to Los Angeles when I was 19. And I moved out on my own, and I knew no one, but I was doing it because I didn't want to leave New York. I mean, I'm from New York. I love it there. I was living in the city. I was living in New York City at the time. But I thought, well, this is going to help my career. So I got to get out there. And I did. And, you know, I did like my first pilot season, which was really intimidating and a lot of pressure, but I was very close to booking that old TV show Lost, which was very exciting because, you know, basically it was the whole cast that you see on the show and me. And I think I'm the only one that didn't get a part in it. And at the time I was really bummed. But what I learned was, like, about a week later, I auditioned for Brokeback Mountain. And while my role in Brokeback Mountain is very small, I wouldn't have been able to do that or even audition for it if I had booked Lost. So I do think that, like, that taught me that a lot of the times, if you're not booking something, it's because either you're going to learn something somewhere else, or there's another job out there that just wouldn't be happening if you booked this one. And, you know, Brokeback will forever be one of my favorite movies of all time and one of the most special things I'll ever be a part of, I think.
This is exactly why I asked that question. So another kind of broad career question here. Do you remember a specific project that maybe gave you the most clarity as far as what you want to accomplish with your career or the path that you were hoping that it goes down?
I don't know. I don't really think I have. I mean, I think the older that I get, and now that I'm a mom and a stepmom, I think that definitely goals shift. You know, like to me now, my priorities are definitely different because I, as much as I love to work and I love it just as much now as I did when I was a kid, which again, like that to me feels so lucky. But I don't want to leave my family for it's harder and harder to leave my family. And I don't want to leave my kids for as long or at all. And so there's so many other factors in it now. And knowing that they're going to be able to, you know, one day when they're older, see the choices that I made, you know, before I was their mom and then after, it does feel like more pressure. And I think it should be. So I do think now there's much more weight on the decisions that I make, you know?
Absolutely. Can 100% understand that and respect it. Jumping back into some specifics here. You know, I have to ask you about Iron Man 2. So nowadays, we look at any sized role in a Marvel movie and think that it can be a game changer for someone. But back when the MCU was first in its infancy with a movie like Iron Man 2, what were your expectations going into a movie like that with that sized role? Did you have hopes that it would pave the way to a larger role in the franchise? Did you have any understanding of what this franchise could possibly become?
I remember I like had I had a meeting with Jon Favreau for that. And they had said to me, like, it's a very, very small part, but it's with Robert Downey and John, and like, it'll be really fun. And a lot of times they bring these characters back into bigger, more substantial roles. That was sort of, it wasn't a promise, but it was definitely something that was hinted at to me. So that's the reason why I even took the meeting was because I thought, well, if there's a chance of it, then like, why not spend an evening working with Robert Downey Jr. and Jon Favreau? Like, great. I love them both. They're amazing. It'll be a good experience. And, you know, that's exactly what it ended up being. It ended up being nothing more than that. But it really was fun. And we were shooting till like 4 a.m. And, but yeah, it's a weird, I guess, cameo that turned into really nothing. But I don't mind, you know.
It's a cameo that really did make an impression, though. I mean, it's a good sequence, and I feel like this is because we're steeped in Marvel content all the time, but I've seen a lot of lists where it's something along the lines of, I feel like wasted is the wrong word, but like an actor who was wasted in a Marvel movie, if you know what I mean,
lists.
Where it's like, yeah. Like they should have made more of you being part of that movie, but I still think it's a nice scene.
It really was fun. And like Robert Downey he was just improvising the whole time. So it was fun to be able to work with him for sure. So I don't regret it, but it is funny. I'm like, what was I doing in that?
Jumping over to The Martian now. Let's get specific with this one. Maybe the opening action sequence. What is it like for you filming that on set? Can you feel the chaos of a moment like that? Or is it more a result of, you know, post-production and movie magic where it still feels fairly calm on your end?
No, I mean, Ridley Scott is a master and the costumes were so incredible and took so long to get on and off. That, you know, and when you have the helmet on, you can only hear your fellow astronauts. So it felt so real, so dark on the set. We were sort of tied to these ropes that when the wind machines would go, they would kind of pull us to make us, you know, unsteady. I had a really hard time even standing up because I'm so petite. So because the wind machines were so massive. But it was so magical and so realistic. We could barely hear each other screaming. So like all of the dialogue and everything, it really was, it did feel incredibly real. And I just remember that the movie was so funny because like to be able to go to the bathroom was a whole, you would need at least 30 minutes to just get the costume on and off. So we would all sort of like, we would all sort of tell each other like, okay, you know, in the next 10 minutes, I'm going to have to go. So why don't we all sort of plan to go at the same time? So we're not all waiting for one person. But it was, yeah, it was funny and very bonding between all of us.
I feel like in some weird world, you know, figuring out when best for a whole company to take a bathroom break might be more efficient on a set.
It's a pretty good idea.
Actually, never mind. That probably shouldn't be a thing. What about when you get onto the Hermes set? Because we know the structure of what we see in the final film is incredibly unique with the rotation. Is that something that you are able to feel and play with while you're standing on a set that isn't exactly that?
Yeah. I mean, it's so realistic when you're there because he, you know, Ridley just gets the best people. Arthur Max did such an incredible job with it. It does feel so realistic again. And then being able to do the, you know, the wire work and everything was, you know, something that I will never forget. Also then when we're taking off and we're all sitting there and the thing is shaking, I get very, very motion sickness. I thought I was going to vomit in the thing. So again, I just kept imagining, well, this is probably like not even a fraction of what it actually feels like. So it really did help with being able to just feel like you were there, and you know, it made the acting just that much easier because everything feels so realistic.
Did they ask if you wanted to try like what is it, a vomit comet or a gyrosphere to prep for that?
I don't think they did because I think if I recall, I was on another movie right before it. So I was doing this movie with Shia LaBeouf and I wrapped that and went like straight to Budapest. So I don't think I had the time to do it, but I'm sure they would have offered it. And I probably would have had to say no, because I mean, I can't even sit in a car really for very long, unless I'm driving without having to vomit.
Oh, God. that's extreme. Just because I'm curious now, have you ever wanted to try anything like, I don't know if this is even related, but like skydiving or bungee jumping?
Oh, no.
Or an extreme sport like that?
No, thank you. Never. I'm not into it.
Good thing you can experience some of this stuff through movie magic and you don't actually have to do it yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
So Megan Levy now. First, I'm curious, what is something that you accomplished while making that movie that you can specifically connect to already having a friendship with Gabriella beforehand?
Well, she and I, yeah, I mean, Gabriella and I we have a lot of the same passion, not just in movies, but also in animal activism. It's why she and I ended up making this movie together. We connected on Twitter, which I only just remembered the other day. The only reason I ever met Gabriella was because I had seen Blackfish and I think I DM'd or tweeted at her and her producing partner saying like, if there's anything I can do to help support the movie or the cause, like, please let me know. And then, they did, they reached out to me and we worked together on some stuff. And then we worked together, me and Gabriella, on some Humane Society stuff. And we just realized how much we respected each other and how much we really wanted to work together. And then when Megan Levy came my way and they were looking for a director, I suggested her because I just felt like she would get it and it would be a great opportunity for us to work together. And it really was because she and I have a way of communicating that is just, sometimes she just really wouldn't have to say anything. She would just sort of come over to me and, you know, either put her hand on my shoulder or she would start to say something and I would finish her sentence. It was just like we had a real connection. And you know, the story is so beautiful and it was very challenging to make. But like one of the more rewarding things I've ever done. The training itself was so incredible. You know, I got to train with a dog, basically trained him to be, you know, a Marine as I was also being trained to be a Marine. And it was, again, so bonding. And to work with animals is unlike any other experience. And we shot in Spain and it was just like this really intense emotional experience. And Gabriella and I to this day are very, very good friends and still are looking for something else to do together. But her movie Blackfish really opened up my eyes to my passion for animal activism. And it's way more intense now. And I'm way more active now than I was before I had seen that movie. So I definitely credit her and that to, you know, one of the great passions of my life.
I very much like scrolling through your Instagram for that reason and how vocal you are about all that. And if the two of you coming together means another project that taps into that in a respect, I am very much all for it.
Oh, well, thank you.
Just because I love talking about this, I got in the habit for a while of asking on Ladies Night, you know, who is a female filmmaker in the industry who you think is making a difference for the better? And a lot lately I've been hearing about what you kind of just described on that project, where you have the ability to bring in another voice that you had previously connected with. I just had that conversation with Marsha Stephanie Blake about how Rachel Brosnahan got her involved in their latest movie together. So is that an opportunity you get often? And has anyone ever done that for you?
Yeah, I think it's definitely becoming something more frequent now because I'm producing more things. So I have more of control over who I'm gonna work with when I get involved with things super early. So yeah, it's definitely something that also that I'm seeking out more often as, you know, I'd rather work with people that, you know, have multiple layers to them. I mean, it's one thing to be offered an amazing movie with a director that you have never worked with before or that has never done anything before, and you have to take that like leap of faith, which is always very scary. But when you're starting from the ground up and you're having to like choose the director and all of those things, there is, it's just a whole other element of creative control and all that. I don't know that it's ever happened to me, possibly, but because I've been acting for so long and like most of the things I've gotten have been because I auditioned for them, you know, it's usually come through that way, I would say. But possibly.
Like maybe it happened and you just don't know about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and I have no idea. Exactly.
Well, I'll toss that other question to you now. Who is someone out there in the industry that you think is changing it for the better?
Oh God, there's so many people.
I know.
You know, David Oyelowo is one of my really, really good friends who I've known forever. Him and his wife and his family, they're family to me. He and I have worked together a couple times. I just think we need more people like him. He is one of the best people that I know as a human being. But he's also incredibly talented. And I'm very excited to see what his directorial debut feature is going to be like. I haven't seen it yet, but I love him so much. And I think he has the greatest heart and he says what he believes. And I just think he is gonna make an even bigger impact than he already has. I just love him.
So I did wanna ask you about Fantastic Four because I read what you said with the Emmys and I don't wanna pry or ask for details, but more generally, because I think other people hearing about challenges and how you overcame them can be very helpful. So, walking away from an experience like that, what would you say is maybe an actionable idea or a value you picked up from going through that, that you are now bringing to the sets that you're on to make sure everybody around you has an experience for the better?
Well, I think that the thing that I always go back to on that one is that I should have, I think I should have listened to my instincts, followed my instincts more, you know, like when my gut was telling me, like, you probably shouldn't let that slide, what that person just said, or, you know, if you're feeling a certain way about how, what an energy is like and how that is affecting your performance, you're being paid to do a certain thing. And if something is in the way of that, you know, you have the right to speak up and say, I'm actually not able to do what I am here to do because of X, Y, and Z. And, you know, I think that speaking up is something that I really, I think that we all probably learn it over and over again to follow your instincts. And if you're feeling a certain thing that is uneasy or whatever, there's a reason for it. But because it was such a big movie and it was like, you know, again, when you're in a, usually, except in this case, when you're in a big superhero movie, they usually do incredibly well, like almost always. So, you know, even if it's challenging or this or that, or, you know, not everything's perfect, like it's probably good for you to do it. That was sort of what I was being told and also was telling myself, you know. And I don't regret doing it at all, but I do regret not having, you know, stood up for myself. I regret that for sure. Because if my daughter ended up acting and was, you know, was in a situation like that where she felt like she couldn't speak up. Meanwhile, I'm a pretty tough person, and I really do advocate for myself. Granted, this was a few years ago and maybe this situation was different, but if I was in that situation today, it wouldn't have happened, or it just would have been a different environment, I think. So again, like, good learning experience, you know?
Absolutely. And I appreciate you sharing that, because I really am a big believer that someone out there might have need to have heard that from an actor they admire like you, and it could make all the difference.
I also think asking people, this is another great, great lesson that I learned, asking other actors, or, and I learned this lesson not just on this movie, but on a couple other after that, asking other actors what their experience was like working with either a producer or a director or another actor. I never used to do that. And now I do, because I think that if you really respect another actor and they've worked with someone that you're thinking about working with or whatever, then you can learn a lot just by talking to them. And I always say, like, if anyone ever wants to ask me about my experiences, on things, then please do, because I think that it's not always, if you're in a position where you can make a choice about doing something or not doing something, and we're not always, sometimes you just have to work. Mm-hmm. But if you're in a position where you can, doing the research, not just with the role, but with the people that you're about to work with creatively, is really important.
Okay, to follow up before I jump into a teacher, in that case, who is someone you've worked with, whether it's a co-star or a director, that you want to sing their praises to somebody else that maybe doesn't get the notoriety you think that they deserve?
Oh, that's such a good question. And I wish I had more time to, like, really think about it, because there's so many.
Put you on the spot a little.
I know. There really are. I've been really lucky. Like, I've worked with so many people that I love so much. I already mentioned David Oyelowo. But, you know, like, I know he gets kind of a crazy rap. Well, first of all, my husband. But I know that's like, how are you going to talk about him? But he's just, like, one of the best actors, I think. And I know for a fact, because I live with him, definitely one of the most dedicated, which also is why I want to bring up this other person, because he is also as dedicated as Shia LaBeouf when I worked with him. And I know there's lots of people have a lot of opinions about him, but when I worked with him, I was just, like, so impressed by his passion and, you know, his dedication to it is really special. So yeah, there you go.
Solid choices right there. Actually, here's one selfish question before a teacher. I'm obsessed with American Horror Story. I know you've worked with Ryan Murphy multiple times.
Yeah.
But, like, Why not jump back into that show?
I have, no one invited me.
Someone should.
I don't know. I wasn't invited back, but like, I don't think people love my character very much on that show. I was, you know, I loved playing her. She, who doesn't want to play a sex crazed ghost? But like, I, you know, people, most people hate me on that show, which I take as a compliment, you know?
That's what that show is. It's about like a whole bunch of unique personalities and having extreme reactions to all of them. So you did your job well there.
Thank you.
All right. A teacher. First off, the opportunity comes your way. Was there any hesitation whatsoever about jumping into it?
No, not at all. I just knew I wanted to play the part. I met with Hannah Fidel. She and Michael Costigan and I had worked together on Brokeback Mountain all those years ago. So they approached me about the idea of producing and starring in it. And I had already seen the movie version, and then I'd also seen Hannah's other work. So I knew that I wanted to see it as a viewer. I wanted to see, you know, more of that story, and I wanted to see it in a different way. And being a part of it as a producer was even more appealing to me because I knew I'd get to be creatively involved from the ground up. And I never questioned it. You know, challenging roles are much more interesting to play than others.
You had produced before though, right?
I had only produced one other thing. I had produced a film called My Days of Mercy with my good friend Ellen Page, yeah.
And jumping into a series in a producerial capacity, was there anything about that surprised you? Any you know, new thing you were able to do that really excited you?
Well, I'd never produced a series before, so it was definitely a learning experience. I was excited about that. And I was, I was excited to you know, be a part of it in that way, to really learn about how that all works. And, you know, literally from like the pitch in the room to FX and everybody else. And the whole thing was new to me, really.
What is a seemingly little thing about being a producer that you didn't realize a producer was responsible for that kind of blew you away?
I don't know. I mean, I think I always assumed that producers kind of, I mean, and they do, their jobs are very, very expansive. You know, you're not just talking about like where you're shooting the show and how much money it's going to cost to get a certain amount of extras each day, and like casting and all of the, there's so many elements to it. I think I always sort of knew that just from being an actor. But you know, I still have no idea what I'm doing in a lot of ways there, which is okay. Like I understand how casting works, and like, you know, the dailies of it all, what the amount of dailies we get. I guess that was surprising, you know, the amount of dailies you get and have to watch, and the amount of times you have to watch every episode. That is a little bit like mind-blowing, I think.
Shifting to the character now, what is it like playing someone with feelings that might be relatable or reasonable who just makes terrible decisions? Because you have to play this character, you have to be in her headspace, but is it frustrating for you at all? Just, I don't know, I guess living in that headspace with the decisions that she makes.
It's not complicated for me. Like as an actor, I find it pretty easy to sort of get into character and then get out. You know, I was excited about the fact that we wanted to make Claire seem relatable in a lot of ways up until the point that she makes this horrible choice. I was excited about finding all of the things that I could relate to with her in order to then, you know, have this big shift in moral judgment. And, you know, because I think you need it. You need to be able to find things that you can relate to with the character in some way. You know, and I think that there are a lot of things about her, even just before it happens. I think that being in her early 30s and feeling a little lost and like, okay, I don't have kids. Everyone seems to be having kids. Is that something that I want? Should I be doing that with this person? I love my job, but am I satisfied where I am? All of these things that I think a lot of people relate to in some way at some point in their life. So I like that. I think that, and I like the challenging part about her is even more intriguing to me to be able to play.
I'm going to try to ask this question without being a big ball of awkwardness right now, but I wanted to ask you about shooting sex scenes. So a lot of times in these interviews, I ask, what is something when you were first starting out that you were embarrassed to ask? And I'll never forget that Daniel Kaluuya told me that he was afraid to ask about what it actually takes to shoot a sex scene. So one, what is a piece of advice you would give to a young actor first starting out who might be nervous to shoot that kind of scene? But then also, what is it about a teacher that made filming those scenes different given the nature of the material?
My advice to anyone who hasn't done it before, who hasn't had to do a sex scene before and then has to, is I think being honest about that is always super helpful. I've had to do scenes with people before who had never, you know, had to do an intimate scene. And when they told me that, I was like, oh, okay. It made me feel more connected in like they were my partner and we were gonna figure this out so that it was as less awkward as possible. And I think the way to make it as less awkward as possible is to know exactly what you're doing, as in to talk about it with your director and to know exactly what the goal is of this scene. A lot of times, like the best sex scenes are choreographed and you have no idea that they are. They seem like they were like somehow improvised and meanwhile they're not. And with our show, it was all thoroughly discussed very specifically. And, you know, just like in a normal, as you would discuss any other scene that was important emotionally or, important to the plot in any way. It was just, there were never any surprises. And so that always made me feel very safe and very comfortable. I also felt very comfortable in this because of our DP. She also was our camera operator in a lot of scenes. I think in all of our sex scenes, she was our camera operator. So it really felt like, she was basically there over my shoulder or Nick's shoulder, kind of like whispering, like, can you put your arm down a little bit? Or like things like that. It just, you literally had somebody watching your back. it was as unawkward as it can be.
I feel like I've gone over with you, but if you have two more minutes, we always end ladies' night with some random questions, like questions sure. that I just pull out okay. of thin air in the moment. Okay. Let's go with, what is the last movie or show you watched?
The last movie I watched was a Tommy Lee Jones movie that he directed with Hilary Swank. What was that called?
I can't believe I can't.
It's a Western.
Yeah.
My husband's shooting a Western here. So all we keep doing is watching Westerns. I can't remember the name of it.
neither can I at the moment, but right now we're going to put a poster up of it. So okay, you guys will know what it is. Of everyone you've worked with, who were you the most starstruck to meet for the first time?
I don't really get starstruck. I never worked with Oprah, but I got starstruck by meeting her.
I don't blame you. If you could only eat one meal over and over and over for the rest of your life, what would it be?
This is so boring, but like this is, I actually don't even want to eat this over and over again. I was about, my stomach's growling and I'm like, I really want like a vegan rice bowl. But I wouldn't want to eat that over and over again. There's nothing. Coffee. I could live on coffee.
Yeah, I can understand how you feel with that.
Yeah.
Do you have any pets?
Yes, we have a 17 and a half year old dog called Lucius.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Let's end with my favorite one. And it's a deep question, but you can keep it light or you can go the other route if you want. What is the biggest fear that you've had that you've actually managed to overcome?
The biggest fear that I have, well, I guess one of my fears, and this is just movie related because that's, I guess, on my mind, but I have a pretty serious fear of heights, and I've had to be in numerous helicopters in movies that I've done. Helicopters specifically with no doors on them. Megan Levy is one of them, and also Shooter, this other movie I did with Mark Wahlberg. And both times I was terrified. I was like, I'm for sure gonna cry. This is so embarrassing. And then I did it and it was fine, like really fine. So I guess that's one.
I still cry when I go to the dentist. So I wish that applied to me, but it doesn't just yet. All right, I have to let you go. But again, thank you so much for your time today. And for everybody out there, do check out A Teacher. It's going to be available on Hulu. You have access to 3 episodes right now, and then they're going to add a new one every single Tuesday until the show wraps up. Recommend checking it out. And Kate, thank you again for your time. Huge congratulations on the show and everything else you've accomplished.
Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.